This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
Well, good morning, fellas.
Hello.
It is rare that I get to say this, but I watched a TV show. I have completed the first season of a TV show, I believe 10 episodes all in all, and I enjoyed every single episode. I believe that every episode was brilliant. It made me laugh. It made me feel. I loved it. Peacemaker concluded this week, and it was fucking awesome. I just have to go on record as saying that. I gotta say, I think it's my favorite superhero show I have ever watched.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
James Gunn really hit it out of the park. I mean, everything was incredible with it.
And I gotta say, I listened to a review on an NPR podcast I listened to called Pop Culture Happy Hour, and they hated it.
Wow.
I mean, their reviewers couldn't find anything kind to say other than the opening credits. And I was like, are we watching the same show? They went on. I mean, I legitimately felt like they didn't watch past the first episode because they just talked about what an awful human being Peacemaker is. And I'm like, they went on to say, you know, he's a racist. You know, he's this, he's that. And I'm like, that's not what this show is about.
No.
And it is about him, you know, someone who has been, you know, a fascist, racist, horrible human being, understanding that was a product of his upbringing and that he can make other choices, and he grows throughout the season. I was stunned at how tone deaf the NPR review was, and I gotta tell you, I love this show. I not only was I thrilled with the character arcs involved, because so many of our superhero shows don't have much of an arc, that I was thrilled with John Cena's capacity. I had no idea he had so much range. I was thrilled with his ability to do comedy. I was thrilled with his ability to do drama. He really wins you over. I thought this show was amazing. All the way through the end credits of the last episode, I thought this show was amazing.
There were a lot of things I expected out of the show, but what I didn't expect was for every single character, except for maybe Vigilante, to have a story arc. There was character growth on every single character.
And I didn't expect to like Vigilante because, you know, I read that book when it was first coming out back in the 80s, and I was a little put off at the comedic take on Vigilante, because the original Vigilante book was pretty damn serious.
Right.
And Adrian Chase was, you know, a pretty damn serious guy. I loved how ridiculous this character was. I very much enjoyed that. And, you know, he didn't have much of an arc. He was a supporting character. But I enjoyed him being the sidekick to Peacemaker. I thought that was a terrific take.
I think those buddy moments.
Yeah,
when absolutely. They go out and blow stuff up. I mean, that's that's the type of thing that you can just see these guys doing for fun.
And one of the things I deeply appreciated about the show is they are giving Arkonomos shit throughout the series. You know, just giving him hell about his beard, etc. And you just think that that's a funny laugh-off kind of thing. And in the last episode, it pays the hell off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that deep emotional reasoning, it just... Uh-huh. Was not expecting it.
I mean, it really made me feel for the character, you know, who just completely comes across as a ridiculous character throughout the series. I mean, you got hints of his depth, you know, like in particular when he and Peacemaker and he and the rest of the group bond when they're singing, you know, the hair metal band music in the truck. Several episodes back, you know, you got some kind of a sense like, okay, he's all right. I just, every character has their moment. And, you know, I talked on a previous episode about how much I hated that Sophie got, you know, butterflied. Right.
Yeah.
And there was a moment in this episode where it didn't feel so awful. You know, I mean, I was just like, it's awful that Sophie's gone, but the way Goff talks to Peacemaker towards the end, I was just like, wow, You know, I mean, there is so much depth in every little thing. Things that you think are just, you know, thrown out there that are just cast-offs have a pretty damn deep meaning. I am stunned at the level of writing James Gunn brought to this project. And, you know, I had this sense that, you know, he said, hey, I got this idea for a thing, and HBO just threw all the money at him, right? And I think this in terms of proof of concept, take these great creators and let them do what the hell they want to do. They will make fantastic entertainment for you.
And they've greenlit season two, and he is so writing and directing every episode of season two.
And that is so exciting. That is just so exciting.
Yeah, there was only one thing that didn't work for me in the finale. And
was it Aquaman? Was it Aquaman fucking all the fish?
Oh no, I was cool with that. Yeah, no, I've been avoiding spoilers because Paul hasn't seen this yet. But I don't think having the theme song being played over the big battle,
right,
that didn't work for me. That song just did not work for the big fight.
It did for me because it changed the fun, right? It shifted the tone of what we have enjoyed for 10 episodes on the opening credits and just how just laugh out loud fun that is. And it really, it was a tone shift. And the music is altered, you know, as the conflict is going on. And I got to tell you, you know, that they have really laid the stakes in the story. And there are moments in that fight where I'm like, no, you know, I mean, yeah. I was just really deeply concerned for our characters. And that, again, is a testament to the writing. It's a testament to the directing. It's a testament to the acting. The bench strength that this cast has is amazing. Yeah, These guys are just fantastic.
I love the cameos. And I found out in an article, they had a really hard time doing one of the cameos, getting him available to record, to the point that James Gunn recorded him on the set of Guardians of the Galaxy 3 with like the Marvel cameras and all.
I'm sure Marvel loved that. Well, Peacemaker is just a home run. Cannot wait for season two. Cannot wait. This was just awesome.
I gotta admit, I'm actually surprised that Wayne didn't mind that cameo. I've already seen the cameo. Like you can't go. You can't even open your eyes and open up an internet without the cameo being spoiler for you.
I was not spoiled either, but I tend to avoid social media prior to these shows.
Yeah, okay. I mean, honestly, for Peacemaker, like it is what it is for me. You know, it's not like I'm looking forward to finishing it, but like I didn't think anything DCEU altering was going to happen. Necessarily that I wouldn't want to get spoiled for me, but I mean, I was actually surprised.
The show is that good that spoilers would be an issue, really. But that you're right, that scene's doesn't really spoil anything. It was Ezra Miller that they had to record on the Guardians of the Galaxy set because they just did not have a chance to get him in for recording.
It was so good. I laughed. So I there were moments that I just, you know, throughout the entire series, but particularly in the last episode, that I was just laugh out loud. I just loved it. It was great.
I look forward to getting back into it. I've only seen the first episode so far, and I only saw it recently. You know, there's just too much TV, Aaron. And I made a choice a few weeks ago to, it was like, do I binge watch Peacemaker or do I binge watch Reacher? And for some reason I chose Reacher. I'm not upset with my choice.
I did both. I loved Reacher. I loved Reacher. Reacher was great.
Yeah, I'm not upset.
Also, not a bad actor on the screen.
No, agreed.
Also, terrific writing. Also, enjoyed every single episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was not an episode in Reacher that I was like, ugh, they could have done without that one.
No, it is a good time for streaming services, but a bad time if you don't have time to watch them all.
That's true. But, you know, we have been saying forever, we are on record as saying that, you know, what DC and Marvel really want to do if they want to raise money for a charity is re-release JLA Avengers, you know, the George Perez, Kurt Busiek?
Yes.
Yeah.
Kurt Busiek team up. And lo and behold, 7,000 lucky readers are going to be able to get a copy of JLA Avengers. because that mother is coming out, and I believe it's mid-March.
Yeah. So, you know, I was reading about it because I was super excited about it, and I was like, shit, this is exciting. I want to buy it. I'm looking forward to it. It goes to a good cause. It goes to the Hero Initiative.
Yep.
And, you know, super, I was like, okay, I want it. You know, I know there's only 7,000 comics copies, but, like, let's be honest. Is that really that limited in today's comic world? You know, I mean, some of those Image books only sell about that much a month. But, you know, I was like, okay, you know, let me do some research and, you know, see if my comic shop's, you know, if it's available for pre-order anywhere. It's not available for pre-order anywhere that I can see. My comic shop is saying that it's only going to be done via allocation. You know, like almost like a rare bourbon that they're going to allocate these 7,000 copies to certain comic shops. And
that's what Zeus Comics told me as well.
Yeah. Which I mean, hey, whatever. I hope in the end, as long as they sell all 7,000 copies and they go to a good cause, obviously this is inspired by what George Perez is going through. But you know, when we were talking about it online earlier this week, Wayne said, yeah, you know, maybe Midtown Comics or something like that. And, you know, it's funny because then I went to Midtown Comics and did some research, and you can buy the entire series for like $10.
Right.
And I did not realize that. You know, it's just one of those things that it's like, I haven't really thought about purchasing it. And then once you think about purchasing it, it's like, oh, like it's readily available. But, you know, yeah. Obviously not in an imprint edition, special edition kind of thing.
Right. Like, I know where my copies of it are. They're right on the shelf in the specific spot because at least one issue of mine is signed.
Mm.
So, like, I know right where mine are to go pick them up and read them if I want to. I do wish
for Wayne.
I do wish that I had like a collected one. So instead of being four issues, it's one big one.
Yeah. But I actually don't own this at all in print.
Oh, really?
I will admit, I'm not 100% sure I've even fully read JLA Avengers. I still have my print copy of the collected edition of DC versus Marvel, which I obviously adore, from Ron Mars and Dan Jurgens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish I had that. I don't own that one.
Yeah, I definitely kept that one. I'm like, oh yeah, that one's not going anywhere. But I don't think I've ever fully read JLA Avengers. It, you know, it originally came out in 2003, and I just don't recall. I mean, I remember seeing it on the shelf. I just don't recall actually purchasing it at the time.
Yeah, it was really good.
I've got my floppies of both of those, and like Wayne, I can lay my hands on them pretty quick, which is saying something because I really can't on most of my my collection. But I am surprised that they're limiting it to 7,000. To be perfectly honest, and I'm also surprised that the purchase price is $30. I feel like they should have juiced that by another 10, because you know the I understand that all the proceeds are going to the Heroes Initiative, but the retailer takes a cut of that, and as they should. Don't get me wrong, but it's because it's charity, because it is such a rare commodity. I don't know why they wouldn't make it a little bit more expensive than that, because $30 is a really easy entry point.
Well, and it's for charity, right? So yeah,
great.
Admittedly, I would have paid $50.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing that number one, I don't think that this is going to get limited to 7,000. I think this is the first wave. I think that, you know, once they've opened this door and they see how quickly these go, they'll do another, like this time a premium hardcover, because I think this is just a trade paperback, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great to have this in a hardcover edition? You know, with additional content, you know, the making of that kind of thing. I mean, I could really see this being $100 book done right. And it should be. And I think it should go to support an organization like the Heroes Initiative. But I'm concerned that, you know, because I was doing the math and I'm like, okay, well, how much money is this? Well, when you take out retailer fees, you know, and I'm sure Diamond Distributing gets their cut too. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like that's a whole lot of money for the Heroes Initiative.
No, I'd imagine it's probably $5 to $10 max.
Yeah, and that's not a lot of money. So, you know, I think you can do this. I mean, just for the product that they're doing, I think they could have juiced it by another $10. Easy.
Now, that being said, don't bilk me, but I would have been. Yeah. I would have been willing to pay more.
I feel like it's more reader friendly. It's more consumer friendly than it is charitable.
Yeah.
That's my thought about it. I was like, well, you know, this is a really good cause. It's a cause that I imagine George Perez supports. They're doing this in honor of George Perez, who has ceased his cancer treatment and, just planning to live out the rest of his days without going through the rigors of chemo, radiation, et cetera. I feel like there was a better thing to do here, but maybe I'm right and there's something else on down the road. Possibly. Maybe this is proof of concept.
And I believe that George Perez was actually one of the founders of the Hero Initiative, if I'm remembering correctly.
You may be right. That sounds right to me, Paul.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, you know, hey, in the end, it's a good cause. I'm happy to support it. Hopefully I am able to, by purchasing this book, but...
And just a reminder, because I don't think we stated it, the Heroes Initiative, if I am remembering correctly, provides health coverage to former comic book professionals or even current comic book professionals who don't have health care.
Yeah, it's a not-for-profit. Not just health care coverage, but also I think also legal fees, if I remember correctly.
So they can sue Marvel for their rights.
Exactly.
Yeah, I Heroes Initiative is great. The sad thing about Heroes Initiative is that there's a need for it to exist. There are so many comic book professionals who, you know, just weren't provided because it was all work for hire. They weren't provided any benefits, no retirement, no health care, etc. And, you know, many, many of these guys just wind up in a really rough space. So I think the Heroes Initiative is worth your time.
Absolutely.
Yep. But hey, I'm going to take a break here and
from your positivity.
Yeah, well, and share with you. I want to share with you something that happened this morning. I woke up to find that my dog Walter had gotten sick overnight.
Oh no!
And he had pooped all over the room, and fortunately, the dogs sleep in a tiled floor room. But he had pooped all over the room. It was a consistency of pudding. It was such that it was rather like a Jackson Pollock painting. All over. The evil had come out of him, apparently. And the other dogs were just sort of huddled in a corner, horrified by what had happened. I kind of feel like that's what the Comixology version 4 was.
did to my eyes.
That's right. Yeah.
Well,
that's right.
And I was afraid something like this was going to happen. I made a comment in one of our chats just a week or so ago and saying, I'm a little nervous about this Comixology Amazon update they keep talking about, what they're going to do.
Yeah, and I replied back thinking, oh, it's not going to be a big deal. They did this with Audible, and Audible still works really well. And boy, was I wrong. I mean, wrong within an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, I was wrong fast. when I sat down to read my comics Wednesday night, number one, I fired up my Comixology app, and it told me that I had nothing in my library. Everything was zeroed out. And, as a guy who's got more than 8,000 titles in his library, that is a little concerning. It's also concerning to me that, I don't have 8,000 downloaded to my iPad, but I probably have about 200. That are ready to read and go, in the event of, we are a year out now from the winter storm, last year's winter storm here in Texas that had me without power for 50 hours. And I'd like to point out the ability to read comics during that period was essential to my survival. I kid you not, the ability to have media saved to your device was a way for me to pass the time. When I sat down to read my comics Wednesday night, there was nothing on my iPad. And then I had to, I went, okay, well, maybe this thing that Wayne was talking about earlier in the day, maybe I need to update my Comixology. And the first time I went to the app store, it told me everything was current. And I was like, well, what the fuck? So I restarted Comixology, same thing, zero everything. You got nothing. Fuck you, Aaron. And so I go back to the App Store, and now it's showing that there's an update. So I update, and it took 40 minutes for my goddamn Comixology to update. And I think part of that is how big version 4 was. And then I think it's also recounting your library. And because my library is so big, I think that was part of it as well. I could be wrong. But it took forever for this thing to load up. And when it did, oh, God. Tell me about how bad it was, Wayne.
Oh, so I found this first on Android and then updated on my iPad to see that it did the same thing. This is about as big of a downgrade as you can get, with most of the functionality that was there gone, the interface looking horrible. There are flaky things about it. People have mentioned that they've lost thousands of their books. And I honestly, I don't know. Like, I don't know how many books I had before.
Yeah, that's my thing. Now. You know, I don't know what I've lost. I mean, I'm sure if I did some research and searching around, because, you know, there are some titles that are no longer available on Comixology, but because they were in my library, I was still able to access them. I'm not, you don't know what you don't know, right?
Yeah, we've been reading through Comixology for so many years now that there's no telling what's missing from our catalogs that we don't even know about.
Well, and here's the thing. I'm aware. I am fully aware, for those people who are about to make the comment, that was always, you know, the danger of digital media. It has a disclaimer, right? You are not purchasing, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just, you know, with going full digital, that is literally, that comes with the territory. I get it. I do.
Yeah, except you could export out DRM-free versions of your comics and have them before, and they've taken that away.
Yeah. So I'm admittedly, because I don't know what I'm missing yet, I'm less upset about that. But what mostly upsets me, for me personally, is the changes to the app and the changes to the website.
Yeah.
You know, smart lists. Smart lists for me as a weekly comic book reader. Here's your recent purchases. Here's your recent downloads. Here's your unread. Vital. The ability to sort your library by title. You know, by alphabetical order. Like, there's no. I mean, yes, you can sort by, you know, list format. You can, you know, group by series. But it's basically like, hey, if you own 10,000 books, here's all 10,000 of your books in one screen.
Right. Well, and the ability to toggle between what's on your iPad or what's on your device versus what's in the cloud was key. I mean, I was always going back and forth.
Yeah.
It is easier to, for me, it was easier to sort what was on my device. And, you know, if I felt like I was missing something, I could then toggle back to the cloud. Well, there, you don't have that ability here. It's just, here's everything you own. And so, like, what I do after every recording is I remove the books that we've talked about.
Yeah, right? Same here.
And so I look at what I've removed today that we're not going to talk about. For instance, we're not going to talk about Fantastic Four number 40. So I removed it from my iPad, and it's still sitting right there on my screen. That shit drives me crazy.
You can filter to download it. Now, I will say that. If you on the main screen, if you click the filter button, the first option is downloaded. And if you select that, it'll just filter to what you have downloaded on your iPad. So it does have that, but it's like the navigation. I mean, when I opened up this app and there were only two options on the bottom, library and discover, I was like, huh, maybe they moved all the things that I like to different buttons. And no, they just got rid of them. And here's the thing. All Amazon and Comixology had to do
was nothing.
Literally nothing. All they had to do was leave it as is. I didn't, you know, I wasn't asking for enhancements. Yes, it would be nice to have in-app purchasing, but I've been beaten at that drum for 4 years now since the acquisition happened. I'm okay. Now, but instead, they did something, and the thing they did took away so much massive functionality, so much base functionality in the product that, like, I mean, you saw, you know, I sent out a thread, like even celebrities like Patton Oswalt, who's a weekly comic book reader, went on a long tirade about how awful it is and how at this point he's like, well, I'll just download the Marvel and DC apps because I can still, you know, they still have some of the functionality that I appreciate.
Yeah, I'm seriously thinking about that myself. One of the other frustrating things for me is it's designed for people that are looking at it as a library versus people that are weekly readers. So, for example, if you go into, you know, group by title and you go into a title, it starts you off with issue number one.
Right.
And you can change that sort order, but there's nowhere to change that sort order throughout the entire app. You have to do it in each individual title as you go in. When you're having to re-download everything because it wiped out your downloads, it's really difficult to do that for each title.
In the former app, it would show you a progress bar at the bottom of each cover, right? So, you know, it'd show your, you know, Nightwing number 89. It would show, it should show for me, completed, that it would show, you know, a full green bar. This doesn't have that. You know, when I'm looking at the books on my screen, I don't know which ones I've started. It did not carry over my read history. So when I go and I look at all the books I have in a given series, I don't know which one I've read. Yeah. I mean, and we read such, I mean, we talked about this in our chat earlier in the week. We're all probably, you know, everybody on this podcast is probably in the top 10% of Comixology users, right? I mean, we are buying all of our comics digitally, and we buy a substantial amount of comics each week. This app is such a significant step backwards. I mean, it is only marginally better than reading a PDF.
Yeah.
Because all of the tools that I used to make my experience more efficient are gone.
Yeah, and I used to buy the books that we would get from Presslist because I didn't want to read them as PDFs.
Same.
Well, and so besides all of the complaints about the app itself, the website. So they've done away with Comixology Submit.
Yeah,
so
it redirects you to the Amazon site now.
Yep, but they've done away with Submit. So small press creators have to go through and submit their books through the Kindle Submit. That the percentage, instead of being 50-50, is 65-35. So they're getting less money, and they're not grandfathered in. So if they had their catalog submitted on Comixology, they have to resubmit all of it over on Kindle now.
Well, and let's just talk about the Amazon site for comics now.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Now, I don't know what this coming Wednesday will look like, but since this happened last week on New Comic Book Day, I can't find the new releases. Now, I bought my stuff from the Comixology site before it flipped, right? Mm-hmm. So I bought my Tuesday and Wednesday comics, and that was the same pleasant experience that it always was. But when I went back to see what the new release page looked like, it provided far less information and far less comprehensive information. Yeah. You know, on the Comixology site, you know, you would have their, you know, featured books. You know, these are the books that, you know, for whatever reason we think are highlights of the week, and then it would bust it out by publisher. I still haven't figured out how to see it by publisher.
They don't have it by publisher.
Because you can't.
Yeah. And that's crazy. That's crazy.
Like, I would go through, like, say, the Marvel books and just click, 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 click to add them all to cart. There is no cart. You have to buy each book individually. And besides having to buy them, you have to actually go into the book to do it. So it is such a slow experience. When it comes time to buy our books on Wednesday, it is going to be a really slow experience for us. And this is not designed for people that are weekly readers.
Yeah, it really seems
painful for a weekly reader.
For whatever reason, and this is what I don't understand. I mean, usually when you look at this type of experience, you can figure out why the company did it, why it was an improvement to them. I don't understand it. I don't understand why you would make the experience less simple for your customer, why you would make the experience less satisfactory to your customer. I don't understand that. But everything that they have done here has fucked up my experience. This isn't just a Windows upgrade where I've got to figure out where my hotkeys are again. This is fundamentally a fucked up implementation. And you know, it's called version 4, but it feels like a beta test of a version not yet won. I mean, this is, to go back to my original point, this is the evil, awful, smelly stuff that came out of my dog this morning. This is terrible.
Yeah, well, and I think why they did it, what I think they're trying to do is they're trying to get everything over onto the Kindle.
I agree. I mean, I do think that that is a goal.
And I think from that standpoint, they'll have the one development team developing for all of it so they can have less employees and they'll have one background infrastructure. But the problem is Kindle isn't the same type of reading. You go out and you buy a book. You don't go out and buy, you know, every week 15 books.
Yeah.
It's just,
well, and Kindle is really built for novel reading. You know, it is built for a text experience. It is not a satisfactory comic book experience. And here's what just baffles me is Amazon took away so many things that worked. You know, they looked at the Comixology experience, and instead of saying, "Wow, you know, we need to change the Kindle to be more like Comixology in the comic book space," they said, "What we need to do is dumb down Comixology to be more like Kindle."
Yeah,
that makes no sense to me whatsoever. Other than they're a monopoly, they're really the only solution for digital comics. They are the preferred medium. I think Amazon is such that, you know, fuck you is sort of their perspective. Yeah. I mean, they're big enough to be able to do that.
And the feedback on this has universally been negative. I have yet to find an article that is speaking positive about it after the release. If there were articles something before the release that people were saying, here's what's coming and we think it'll be good. But nobody after actually seeing it has liked this.
You know what just occurred to me? You know, I opened up the Kindle app while you said that. It is the same. And I didn't realize that. The Comixology, because I don't read much in Kindle at all, clearly. The Kindle app and the Comixology app have the same navigation, the same structure, the same the same sorting, the same filtering. I did not realize that. And so that, yeah, they've turned the Comixology app into the Kindle app, which is horrible.
It's the same programming code on the underneath it, and it's the same catalog, because when you add something now to Comixology, you're actually adding it to Kindle.
Well, and that's been going on. That's been going on for a while. If you had your Amazon and Comixology accounts linked, your Comixology books would show up in the Kindle app. I know that happened for me.
Yeah, but I don't see like new comics in there except for the Comixology Unlimited ones.
Sure, sure. But you know, one of the things that Amazon is so focused on its own platform, its own devices, etc., that they screw stuff up for you if you're using like their Kindle app on the iPad, you know, if you're using it on an iOS device. So for instance, you know, there is a function on your iPad where you can have it read text to you. And so if you try to use that function with a Kindle ebook, Amazon has that blocked. It doesn't allow you to narrate a Kindle ebook on your iPad, whereas you can do that with any other app, you know, on your iPad. It blocks it for Kindle. And that's because Kindle wants you to have a shitty, you know, experience on the iOS so that you go out and buy a Kindle.
Yeah.
Huh. And it just infuriates me.
Or they want you to buy the audiobook and use their Whisper Sync.
Right. Or, you know, if there's an audiobook available. Right. So I do the narration thing when it's a book that's not available through audio, because I'd rather listen to a real narrator read it versus the computer read it to me. But it is super frustrating to me that, you know, Kindle blocks that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that because that's not a feature I've used. And I do use the Kindle app for reading books, and I've never thought it was particularly good, but for a novel, it's not bad. For a comic book, it's horrible.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. And I wish that I could find something to praise about this Comixology version 4.0. I can't find it. I don't see anything good about what they've done here.
So online testers have looked at the file sizes. The file sizes are now larger with less quality. Somebody had the same comic book open on a iPad they had not updated yet and an iPad that they had updated. And the actual quality of the image is decreased with an increased file size, as well as the app size is now larger. Comixology's app was more efficient than this Kindle version of the app.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Comixology had the benefit of being a company that had to earn their customers, right? And so they had to listen to their customers. And I feel like, you know, other than the fact that they would never come on for an interview with us, that they said, well, what would you want to talk about? No, thank you. they did listen to their customers and they produced a product that their customers found valuable. Amazon didn't fucking care. And that blows my mind because so many other aspects of the Amazon customer service experience are top notch. You know, I always marvel and commend them for how quickly they handle concerns. In fact, it's always first call resolution in my experience. I am blown away at how tone deaf this implementation was.
What's really sad to me is that digital comics have taken large market spaces in the last couple of years since COVID. Uh-huh. And this is going to cause a step back. The number of commenters out there that have said they're either going back to physical or they're stopping comic reading entirely because of this. Or at very best, they're going over to the Marvel and DC apps, which means all of the indie books are going to be left out.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't plan to go back to physical. No. Right. I mean, I don't have the space for that. But it does. I mean, I could very much see, you know, I'm a guy who's been reading comic books since 1975. I could very much see a less enthusiastic fan saying, you know what? Fuck this. I'll go spend my money on something else. Because comic books are expensive. Digital comic books, you really have to appreciate the platform and experience. Because if you don't, you're not going to spend $5 on a book every week. Right? But this is Amazon being the 900-pound gorilla not fucking caring about your experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. As it is, I'm leaning towards buying all of my Marvel books through the Marvel app and reading them there instead of Comixology because it still has the old feel to it.
I know the answer to this for me, but I don't know why someone wouldn't say, you know what? I don't need to buy new comics. I can read my comics through my Marvel Unlimited subscription and I can read my comics through my DC Infinite subscription.
Yeah,
I don't need to buy comics anymore. I can just pay for the streaming service. Yeah. Now I know why I'm continuing to buy comics. It's because we do this every week. Yeah. And this is how much I enjoy talking to my friends every week about comic books. I mean, this is me sitting in Richie Baylog's built-in garage reading comics in a circle with my friends on, you know, Friday afternoon. This is that experience for me. If I wasn't doing this, I would not be buying comics this way.
No. So, and I'm the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just blown away at the callous nature of this implementation. And it's just awful. It's just awful. And I know that I know that everybody else who is using this app feels the exact same way. We can all be united in our disgust at what Amazon has done here. And the thing is, Amazon's never going to comment on this, ever. They don't have to. You know, they're just going to move on to the next thing. It is a terrible, terrible thing they've done.
Yeah, it's a bummer. It really is. And, you know, I'm hope, like you said, they won't respond. Or maybe they will. You know, if they're going to do the right thing, they would. But I just...
They don't care.
They don't care.
They don't care. They are not going to.
Unless but it you know impacts their wallet. Well, who cares? Does care? Who?
King Conan cares.
I don't think he cares.
He doesn't really. He cares. He cares to cut your arms and legs off.
Yeah, that is what King Conan does.
I gotta tell you, I have mixed feelings about this series, King Conan number 3 by Jason Aaron and Mahmoud Asrar. This book is beautiful. I'm enjoying most of the book, but here's what I don't like about the book is that it's a king. It is called King Conan, and certainly, you know, it is our King Conan who is fighting all of the undead on this island. But all the flashbacks are prior to him being king, and that's what I'm wanting is the business of him being king, yeah. Right? I don't want essentially King Conan getting back to his barbarian roots. I want to see him plotting strategy and leading armies and that kind of thing. And I'm not getting that in this book. What I am getting is beautiful and great, and I'm loving all of the background and whatnot. But if this series is all it's going to do is do flashbacks to back when Conan was a barbarian, or Conan was a pirate, or Conan was a thief, that's not really what I'm looking for.
No, I agree. You know, and that's,
it's retrospective Conan.
It is. And, you know, looking at it, and we actually complained about this in the first issue, right? I'm like, you call it King Conan, and he reveals in the first issue, I'm not the king anymore. And we're not seeing him. The only King Conan we're getting in this book are flashbacks where he's interacting with his son.
Yeah.
And for me, like, it feels like it's a bit of a, you know, I feel like I got tricked because yeah. I bought a book called King Conan, and really it's just, you know, old man Conan, not even old. It feels like just a regular Conan book. He's shipwrecked on an island, you know, and he's fighting for his life.
There is nothing kingly about this Conan, right? But, you know, the thing that I really did enjoy was the princess's backstory.
Mm-hmm.
I got a real kick out of that. That was a lot of fun and has nothing to do with Conan. You know, I was just fascinated by that. And, you know, sort of a storytelling of, you know, what happened to the Americas, you know, during a European invasion. I was very much fascinated by that. But, you know, it's hard to say that I'm dissatisfied with a book that is so well told, a story that's so well told.
Oh, yeah.
And is so beautifully drawn and colored. I mean, everything about this book is great, except it's not telling me what it promised me it was going to tell me. What you know, when you see King Conan, you expect a crown.
Yeah.
I expect some majesty. I expect, you know, him leading people and having to deal with the issues of running a country. But he is essentially Conan the Barbarian in this book.
Yeah.
And that's what I find frustrating about it.
Yeah, for me, it's... like you said, beautifully drawn, just a little, but I am disappointed in it. And I feel bad saying that because, you know, I think this is the finale of Jason Aaron's run on Conan. And it, now we're halfway through the story at this point. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like it's going to go out with a whimper, right? Rather than a bang. Like, I wanted to see the epic King Conan story we've been
wanting,
you know, this whole time. And right, really, it's like you said, it's just another Conan the Barbarian tale, except he has a child in the flashbacks.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little dissatisfied with the book. It's a great book if what you're looking for are, you know, Conan retrospectives, but it is not telling me a King Conan story.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, well, shame, shame, shame. Like Comixology. No.
It is. Yeah. So a book that I just think was gorgeous this week, as well as King Conan, was Nightwing number 89, which is telling a crossover with Superman, Son of Kal-El. I thought this was a really good looking book.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny because this book kind of showed me that one of my, I like Superman, Son of Kal-El. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But I don't love Superman, Son of Kal-El.
Agreed.
And I think part of it is the art.
Yeah.
You know, the art in this book, which is just so beautiful. And when I think about it in comparison to the art of Superman, Son of Kal-El, even the same characters are drawn so much more emotive and well done in this book than they are in the Superman book. And again, I'm not saying there's bad art in the Superman book, but it ain't Bruno Redondo.
Right. You're right.
Yeah, and it was interesting. The beginning of the book felt like it was the Superman book.
Right.
Yeah, because we have so much time just with him in the fortress that for a moment I forgot I was reading Nightwing.
I very much enjoyed this crossover. One, it's strange to me that such a big step as John having a conversation with, you know, his holographic father in the fortress and making the decision to turn him off. Strange to me that that didn't occur over in the Superman book. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a true crossover. They're blurring the lines. Key character development can occur in the Nightwing book for Superman. I mean, I mean, that's a big damn page where that happens. And I think that is a big, big step for the character. But I also really appreciated there was a moment where Kellex sees John experience that. Right. And I thought, oh, this is going to be bad. Kellex is somehow evil now. I was a little concerned, but it cuts to the next page. And, you know, Kellex has shown up in Nightwing's bedroom where, you know, Nightwing and where Dick and Barbara are asleep. And, you know, Barbara wakes up and she goes, hey, there's a robot petting our dog. And I love that she refers to Bitewing as our dog. You know, yes. Not your dog. I thought that was an important note. But I also
appreciated that they were in bed together. I thought that was an important note. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, because they hadn't
just sleeping there now.
Yeah, they hadn't been explicit about, you know, how physical things had become. But this book is just gorgeous. And the story is so well crafted. You know, the consequences of John needing help, and you know, we saw where Clark asked Dick to check in with his son and be there if he needs him. I you know, there's that momentary panic. Was like, you know, Clark and I spoke before he left. He asked me to look out for John. I should have checked in on him already.
Yeah,
I mean, it's that momentary panic, and I dug it a lot.
Yeah. Well, and I love that conversation where Barbara's just like, "Don't beat yourself up about it. You've got a lot going on." And his response is, Superman, ask for my help.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This is a great book. I very much enjoyed Nightwing this week. I enjoy Nightwing every week. It's a great book. But the tone of it, I'm even more interested now in what's going on in Metropolis with The Rising. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, it's so funny because it's the same writer, right? Same writer, different artist, but I connected more with Jonathan Kent and you know, his relationship. Like it was just such to your point, it is a crossover in the truest sense of the word, in that important things for both books happen. Right. It is, but admittedly, it does kind of feel like this whole Nightwing, you know, Dick Grayson stuff has really taken a back seat to everything going on around it. So I'm assuming we'll, you know, with Knockout, is that the bad guy's name?
Oh, they're in Bloodhaven, yes.
Yeah.
Blockbuster.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting for that story to resolve. It feels like we've kind of taken a significant break from that storyline.
But I like how certain aspects of his storylines did come into it. So the fact that he's using his money to fund stuff came into it. You know, he is one of the people funding the truth.
Yeah. I like that.
That he makes the comment about, you know, his regular identity being out in the open and starts giving him tips about if you're going to wear a mask, you can't just wear a mask. I loved that scene. And I also loved seeing the flashback of, you know, him, Jonathan, as a kid again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he first started getting his powers and they're out of control, and just seeing him interact with Batman and Nightwing as a kid.
Yeah, I did enjoy that scene for sure.
It's an awfully good book.
It is. I'm looking forward to seeing the second part of the crossover because I think I like how they've integrated what's going on, and kind of looking forward to seeing how this resolves with Lex Luthor and the truth and the rising or the uprising and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of resolving, one of the books Aaron and I have been really enjoying came out this week. The final issue of Primordial.
I'm sad, Wayne.
I'm sad. I'm sad that my guided view doesn't work on this book.
Mine either. I was going to ask you about that. It did not handle the panel transitions at all.
It is not doing transitions at all for me.
Yeah, no, it was scrolling is what it did for me. Yeah. Yeah, that was super frustrating. Thank you again, Amazon. But I am very sad that this series is over. This was one of those kinds of stories from issues 1 through 6 that I didn't really know what to expect. It had an ending that I very much did not anticipate.
Yeah, there's all of these things happening in the world and the story, and you kind of expect all of that to be dealt with. But the actual story was a dog coming home to its person. And
fuck those monkeys.
Yeah. Well, and that's what resolves the story, is the dog reuniting with the dog's person.
Yeah.
And the whole world having seen this ship come down, all of this, none of that's dealt with because that's not the story.
Yeah.
The story is the dog coming home.
Yeah.
It hit me in the feels.
Well, and what was amazing about that is I didn't realize that that's what the story was until this issue, right? That it was, you know, your dog gets lost, dog comes home. You had the sense that there was going to be something else, something bigger, right?
Yeah.
But then it is this simple story of, you know, dog loving his person and person loving her dog, and what that and how that, I mean, literally come across time and space to find each other.
Yeah. The last word from both characters, the dog and the person, is home.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a beautiful story. I got to tell you, Wayne, this is one of those things I'm going to buy collected. I'm going to buy this thing in print because it's gorgeous. I very much love this book. And I am just sad that it's over. I mean, it has a very clear beginning, middle, and end. But I'm sad that I don't have this to look forward to every month, because I have deeply enjoyed this book.
Yeah, I am glad that when it first came out, it was interesting, the cover was, but I didn't pick it up until you had read it. And I am so glad you took the leap on it, because this book was... It really hit right where I enjoy reading.
Oh, same. I would love to see, I don't need more of this exact book, but I need more books like this. Books that surprise me. Books that just come out of nowhere. You know, this book literally, I bought this book because I number one, I thought the cover was interesting, which made me look at the previews. And when I looked at the previews, I'm like, I don't know what the hell this is, but I'm buying this book.
This book was the biggest surprise for me since Carmen.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think both those two books couldn't be more different, other than they are so wildly out of left field that you didn't know anything about them going in, and that the quality was surprising on the page. You know, that you're looking at it going, where has this book been all my life? You know, and I feel the same way about Carmen as I do Primordial.
Yeah, I guess they would. When people started talking about some of their books and some of their indie books not being on the app anymore, the very first thing I did was check and make sure Carmen's still in there.
I think that the books that you're going to find that didn't make the transition, and I haven't looked to validate this, but these are going to be from extremely independent publishers. I don't think it's going to be your Image Comics that disappear. I think it's going to be a comic book company that maybe produces, you know, 12 books a year. You know, it's going to be those teeny little guys. I think those are going to be the guys who disappear.
No, I completely agree. And I didn't know who did Carmen or some of the other books. Right. And I can't sort by publisher to find out now, because that's not an option.
Don't get me started, man. Don't get me started. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week that we're going to be frustrated with reading through the Comixology app?
Well, to your point, it was actually a little tricky to figure that out, because I was able to find all new releases, but I was not able to sort by publisher. But I was able to find all new releases for next week. And so next week we have, from DC Comics, new issues of Action Comics, continuing the War World saga, the newest issue of The Human Target, a new issue of DC versus Vampires, the first issue of Aquaman, featuring all the Aquaman in one book. From Marvel Comics, we have the new issue of Dark Days, the new issue of Strange Academy, and perhaps most importantly, issue 2 of Silver Surfer Rebirth from Ron Mars and Ron Lim, featuring Thanos.
So good.
Can't wait.
So, so I have a question. You know, with having all those Aquaman in one place, that makes it easier to kill them all, right?
In theory.
And when an Aquaman dies, do you just flush him down the toilet? Is that how that works?
Do they just like flop around on the ground?
Just asking.
Do they just float face up in the water when they die?
Hey, there was a book we talked about earlier this week, and I can't remember the book, but it was about tryouts for the Justice League, and Warlord was going to be in it.
Oh yes, the upcoming Tom King miniseries that was announced this week, because it's part of, I think, May solicits. Okay. Tom King announced his new 12-issue, I think it's a Black Label series, that is coming out, and it features Warlord. It features a bunch of different characters, including... It's called Danger Street, from Tom King and Jorge Fornes, who were the creative team on Rorschach.
Yeah.
So it's interlocking stories of 21 characters from Lady Cop to Dr. Fate to Warlord to Darkseid. Yeah, and so that was announced this week, and I'm actually quite looking forward to it. I hope it is as good as it sounds, and you know, Warlord, you know, Tom King. Admittedly, I think one of the things I'm most excited about is that it is taking characters other than Warlord that are not beloved to me, so I won't mind when Tom King does horrible, horrible things to them.
I love Travis Morgan. You know, Travis Morgan, the Warlord, you know, there in Scarterus. I love that character. You can only buy like one or two issues of Warlord digitally right now.
And they're
now.
Not the good ones.
No. And I mean, that is one of those books. There are several series from back in the day that I own every single one of them digitally. And that's one that I really want. I love that series.
Oh, yeah.
Love that series.
It also features Starman and Metamorpho. Like, it's got a bunch of characters in it. And Tuesday, May 3rd is when the first issue comes out. And it is the characters were featured in the original DC first issue special series. And he's taking those characters and doing something Black Label-ish with them.
Very exciting. Well, we want to know what you think about Comixology. I think we know, but we want to know. Give us a call, 972-763-5903. That number, once again, 972-763-5903. If we use your voicemail on the air, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
What a deal. Well, hey, guys, we're going to get to continue to live with this frustration for the foreseeable future. So come back, be frustrated with us next week.
See you then.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.